Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore with your week in review for February 21st. If you were wondering just what the heck I was talking about in saying Barack Obama's 25-day honeymoon was over last week, well, you certainly know now. And as I also discussed, a little Reagan optimism is in order, starting with this coming Tuesday as Obama addresses a joint session of Congress and the American people. As I note later, even former President Bill Clinton said as much recently. Anything to combat the depression talk, which picked up in a big way the past few days as the likes of George Soros and Paul Volcker added fuel to the fire. Soros said, quote, "There is no sign that we are anywhere near a bottom," while Volcker explained, "I don't remember any time, maybe even in the Great Depression, when things went down quite so fast, quite so uniformly around the world." I don't know about you, but so much happened this week I was overwhelmed by it all. Actually, we've been overwhelmed since mid-September of last year, and it is amazing to think that less than 2 months into 2009, many of us are already exhausted and certainly more fearful. For starters, a new AP poll revealed that 47% are worried about losing their job versus 28% in February of 2008. 65% are worried about paying their bills. There has been little let-up in the carnage on Wall Street, nor the global economy. Stocks nearly closed at lows not seen since October 2002 and actually going back to 1997. While this week the Federal Reserve lowered its forecast for GDP in 2009 to a decline of 0.5% to 1.3%. It did raise estimates for 2010. And the Fed also hiked its estimate on unemployment by year-end to 8.8% from its current 7.6% level, blaming the downgrade on further intensification of the financial crisis and its effect on credit and wealth, the waning of consumer and business confidence, the marked deceleration in global economic activity, and the weakness of incoming data on spending and employment. Speaking of global economic activity, or lack thereof, Taiwan's GDP fell 8% in the fourth quarter and is estimated to decline a further 3% in 2009 as exports fall 20%. Russia's GDP is now estimated to decline 2.2% in 2009 as industrial production plunged 20% in January and unemployment in Russia hit 8%. In the UK, GDP is projected to fall 3 to 4% this year as debt across the board continues to explode and tax receipts plummet. Britain also has the same banking issues faced here, having already nationalized some of theirs. The opposition is in full throttle, particularly with regards to the Lloyds Banking Group HBOS fiasco. Tory leader David Cameron decried the bonuses Lloyds was attempting to pay, even as its recently acquired HBOS unit reported a loss in excess of $10 billion. People who work hard are seeing billions of pounds of their tax money being paid out and are rightly angry about it, said Cameron. The shadow chancellor, George Osborne, said Prime Minister Gordon Brown created the system of bank regulation that allowed this reckless risk-taking to run amok. Sound familiar? And a new problem hit front and center, Eastern Europe and its banks. Specifically, we've learned Austria's financial institutions have a staggering $278 billion on the line in the region, compared to Germany and Italy, which both have $220 billion in exposure to the likes of Hungary and Poland. For their part, Germany and France said they may have to circumvent the EU, European Commission, and bail out nations employing the euro for the betterment of all. Then there is Japan, which saw its GDP plummet at a stupendous 12.7% in the fourth quarter. But here, Robert Samuelson, in his Washington Post column, took issue with comparisons between the U.S. of today and the quote, lost decade in Japan. Samuelson writes, Japan did not, as some commentators say, suffer a depression, not even a great recession, as others put it. Japan experienced a listless, boring prosperity. Its economy expanded in all but 2 years, 1998 and 1999, although the average annual growth rate was a meager 1.5%. Unemployment rose to 5% in 2001 from 2.1% in 1990. So not good, but hardly a calamity. Japan remained a hugely wealthy society. But then Samuelson writes of today's America. Since the early 1980s, American economic growth has depended on a steady rise in consumer spending, supported by more debt and increasing asset prices, such as stocks and homes. Just as the mid-1980s signaled the end of Japan's export-led growth, the present U.S. slump signals the end of upbeat consumption-led growth. But its legacy is an overbuilt and overemployed consumption sector, from car dealers to malls. The question is whether our system is adaptive enough to create new sources of growth to fill the void left by retreating shoppers. That was Robert Samuelson. In the U.S., data on manufacturing released this week was abysmal, yet again, with regional indices from Philadelphia and New York hitting new lows on the level of activity, while nationally industrial production for January was down a worse than expected 1.5%. There was a bit of decent news on the inflation front, however, as in there was actual inflation, not deflation, with the producer price index for January up 0.8%, up 0.4% on core, while consumer prices for the month were up 0.3%, 0.2% ex food and energy. Many of us would love a bit of consistent inflation. We'll worry about the runaway variety in 2010 and beyond. Then you have the topic of bank nationalization. Last Sunday, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said on This Week, "We should be focusing on what works. We cannot keep pouring good money after bad. If nationalization is what works, then we should do it." Alan Greenspan offered it may be necessary to temporarily nationalize some banks in order to facilitate a swift and orderly restructuring. "I understand that once in 100 years, this is what you do." Economist Nouriel Roubini said, "Paradoxically, nationalization may be a market-friendly solution to the crisis. It provides a fair upside to the taxpayer by allowing the government to sell the assets to private investors after a cleanup of the bank." Rumors were rampant, dispelled by the administration, that one or two nationalizations were imminent, perhaps as soon as the weekend. For his part, Bank of America CEO Ken Lewis, his institution along with Citigroup, the two leading candidates for the guillotine, insisted no one understood how healthy B of A was. "Perhaps, but Mr. Lewis, isn't it right to be skeptical after you yourself were surprised by Merrill Lynch's $15 billion loss last quarter?" My take on nationalization: it is not the end of the world in selected circumstances. As many point out, on a smaller scale, it's been happening virtually every weekend, as the FDIC has shut down over 30 banks since the crisis began with nary a problem for depositors. As for common shareholders, well, that's a different story, but it's not as if you haven't had a chance to get out, particularly knowing the risk. If, on the other hand, I hasten to add, you were an employee at one of these institutions and lost your life savings, my heart goes out to you. On the housing front, where all this started, President Obama rolled out his long-awaited Homeowner Affordability and Stability Plan in distressed Mesa, Arizona, where, incidentally, the median home price has declined from $208,000 to $138,000. We learned at the same time that housing starts for January hit an all-time low, just 466,000 when 530,000 was expected. In laying out his partial solution, Obama said all of us are paying a price for this home mortgage crisis, and all of us will pay an even steeper price if we allow this crisis to deepen. I have lots of details on the home plan in my Week in Review column, so check that out at Stocks and News. com. For now, though, economist Mark Zandi said it's a positive step in the right direction. I worry that it's not going to be successful fast enough. Even Republicans, though, are split on the plan these days. Some say do little, let the free market run its course, along with drastically lower taxes, while there are others, such as yours truly, who followed the path of conservative economist Martin Feldstein. It was Feldstein who said initially that Obama should unleash a massive stimulus program, $800 billion or more, but then he backed off when he saw that the Democratic-controlled Congress came up with a hodgepodge of spending programs, not a job-creating booster shot. And I'm of the camp that if you're going to do something on housing, go all in as well. CNBC's Rick Santelli had a point in his now famous rant from Thursday. The housing plan appears to ignore those who have conducted themselves in the right way, pay their bills, and didn't live above their means. But the problems we face today shouldn't be reduced to mere sound bites. To sum up, from what I've seen out of the Obama administration thus far, I'm underwhelmed. I'm impressed how quickly he was able to enact a stimulus package, but the end result was pathetic. I appreciate the thought on the housing plan, but it doesn't go nearly far enough and is unfair. I await Geithner's bank rescue plan. What we've seen thus far is smoke and mirrors, but I'm prepared to be disappointed here as well. To those fans of Rick Santelli, however, understand I've been preparing for revolution in my own way years before he has. If you only knew some of the web addresses I took down, hidden from view for now, you'd be a little surprised. But Barack Obama's my president, and for my own well-being, let alone the country's, we need him to succeed. He gets another chance on Tuesday to reinvigorate his message. Well, turning to Wall Street, just 2 weeks ago, the major averages were almost back to even for the year, with NASDAQ actually up. 2 weeks later, it's another round of death and destruction. I was struck by some of the following. Shares in Caterpillar, $80 as recently as June 23rd, hit 26. While General Electric has options with a 250 strike price, this as GE fell below $10. And there was General Motors, hitting a 71-year low of 160. The only saving grace on the week was in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, avoiding closing below its October 2000 low of 72.86, finishing the week at 73.65, but still down 6.2% in holiday-shortened trading. The S&P 500 closed at 770, off 6.9%, but still above its November 08 low of 752, which, believe it or not, is significant, while NASDAQ lost 6.1% to finish at 1441. The financials, which were down 57% as a group last year, are already off another 40% in 2009, with the aforementioned Bank of America and Citigroup hitting 24 and 17-year lows, respectively, as shares in Citi traded at 160, before closing at $2.20. Two key players, JCPenney and Lowe's, didn't provide any soothing earnings news or forecast, as same-store sales for both were off 10 to 11%, with Lowe's forecast for the balance of the year a little better. More broadly speaking, with an S&P of 770, if Merrill Lynch is correct with his forecast of $43 for earnings on the index for all of 2009, that's not good news. As for my own forecast, I received a thoughtful note from CC asking me to explain myself further as to why I went from 80% cash to 50-50. I explained at the time, year-end and again end of January, that I just saw a sentiment shift before the actual fundamentals turned. I have no reason to change this feeling in general, except I am deeply disappointed in Obama's lack of leadership thus far, and coming poll figures will reflect this more widely. But I've proven to be stubborn in changing my forecast over the years, and for the most part it has held me in good stead. 2009 is not even 1/6 of the way complete, and I'll be damned if I'm changing my outlook now. I'm a big picture guy. That's why I spend so much time on the international scene. I know as well as anyone the global outlook is dismal, but I also know enough about market history that if and when we receive some solid good news and divine a favorable trend or two, stocks will explode out of the gate like Secretariat. When will that happen? Who knows? I just hope it's from levels approximating today's as opposed to Dow 6000 or S&P 600. That's all for today. Again, you can check the rest out at stocksandnews.com. Have a great week.